But I need to ask you to think about what they really mean. We're talking about people who live together. We're talking about 24 hours a day. We're talking about the woman's body. We're talking about control of every function of her body. We're talking about how she dresses. We're talking about how she walks. We're talking about, yes, whether she uses the toothpaste from the middle or the bottom. We are often in intimate relations, and I want you to think about it. It's important. We're talking about how much toilet paper she uses. We are talking about every aspect of her behavior that an adult should decide for herself. Any definition of what it means to be a sovereign human being includes the most bizarre, ordinary fact of life. Yes, I decide how to do that. To the larger questions of where do I go? How late do I stay out? Women in this country who are battered are under a curfew. The curfew is imposed by a policeman. The policeman is the husband. Adult human beings decide who their friends are. They decide who they want to talk to. They decide what books they want to read and what movies they want to go see. And if they want to go see a movie and their partner doesn't, and they decide to go alone, that's what they do. That's what being an adult is in the most ordinary sense. But most women don't exercise those simplest expressions of freedom. And it's not just because we're afraid to go out after dark because of the men we're not married to. Although we have reason enough for that. When we political people talk about male supremacy, we talk about it in large ways. We talk about patterns of violence against women. We talk about female poverty and its meaning in a woman's life. But when we talk about battery, we have to remember that we are talking about every aspect of a human life every single day, all the time. Thomas Jefferson did not consider these problems of freedom. Our Constitution does not address them. Women were chattel when the Constitution was written. African American women and men were slaves. I want you to understand how important this is. The problem of human freedom has never been considered from the point of view of a woman's life. There isn't any system of government anywhere in the world predicated on the notion that if a woman isn't free, no one is free. There isn't any political science anywhere in the world that says, in a way that matters, that the primary concern about human freedom has to be about the lives of women and children, because they're the ones who haven't had freedom. Cross-culturally and trans-historically, that is true. When we talk about what men do to women, we are, many of us, treated, number one, of course, as if we're making it up. We're not making it up. More than most people, you understand that we're not making it up. And not only are we not making it up, we're so careful not to exaggerate it. We're so careful to fight for our credibility and to protect it. We're so careful to have to prove what we say. We know we're going to have to prove it. So if we know that one out of two women is being beaten, but we can only prove that in some cities in the country, one out of 25 women's being beaten. That's what we say. We say one out of 25. We don't say one out of two. And when we say whatever it is we say, the FBI comes back to us and says, that doesn't happen. When the women's movement first started talking about battered women, we were told that doesn't happen by law enforcement people, by the FBI, by sociologists who now make all their money getting grants to study battery. Yes, they discovered that it happens. And the FBI now says that battery is the most commonly committed violent crime in the United States. Yes, we were right. And we were right for a very simple reason, which is we listen to the people to whom it happens. We listen to women. We believe what women say. We know that when you see a situation of terror and you hear about it over and over and over and over and over and over again, that it's not likely that each woman is making it up. That there are characteristics of this terror that we can look at and understand, and we see that they're systematic, which is to say they happen to all the women who are being hurt. But we're very careful. So we said women were being raped, and we were told that that wasn't true. Every now and then there was a psychotic killer. But hey, not very often. And in fact, something like one out of three women in the United States is in some way sexually abused, actually before she becomes an adult. An adult. So we have the experiences of women, and we take them seriously. We also have history, which is actually not a matter of opinion. Women were legally property. We were legally chattel. White women were legally chattel in the United States. White women, the racially superior women in a racist country, were at the top of a pile and belonged to the men who owned them. They didn't own the clothes on their back. Guardianship of their children passed to another male if the husband died. Intercourse was a right of marriage. That is to say, the woman wasn't just owned as a piece of property. If she was a married woman, and I say with the exception of slavery, because slavery is a very, very important central phenomenon in this country, and the experiences of African American women in relation to marriage have been different, because the slave owner owned both the woman and the man. But if we take what we consider the quote unquote the normative experience, which is the white experience, then what we see is that part of the ownership of women was that women were owned not just outside, but inside. We were owned, and intercourse was part of what went with us. The right of sexual access to us is part of the way in which we were owned. And the children that we had were owned as property by the man who owned us. Now, the reason that this remains important, even though it has changed somewhat, is that laws about marital rape have not changed enough. When a woman was owned in marriage, and intercourse was a male right because he owned the woman, she was his wife, that's what it meant, that he had a sexual right to her. He couldn't rape her, because anything he did to her was his right to do. When we take a stand and say, if you force a woman to have sex inside marriage, that is rape, we are saying you cannot own a woman in marriage. You do not own her body. You don't own it outside, and you don't own it inside. That is an urgent political stand for us to take. The fact of the matter is that the sense of possession that husbands have over wives, the sense of entitlement, the sense of right, the sense of, I have a right to do to her what I want to do. Leave me alone. Why are you bothering me? This isn't your business. If I hurt her, I hurt her. It's like my car. If I want to drive my car into a brick wall, I drive it into a brick wall. What business is it of yours? That attitude used to be grounded in law. And now we have a little bit of distance from that, but not enough. And I think that when we look at male culture and what men say about women, and when we talk to battered women, we can say that when men have sex with women, they feel a sense of entitlement and ownership and superiority that goes beyond what any adult human being has a right to feel about another adult human being. Which is to say that this movement has got to take a stand and say that men do not have sexual rights to women's bodies. And this movement has to understand, when you see women who are hurt coming to you and you're thinking, this is so irrational, this is so insane, why is this happening? What is driving this man? Part of what is driving him is that he has had intimate sexual relations with this woman, and from his point of view, she belongs to him. And if you want to get in the way of that, you get in the way of that at threat to yourself. It is a very big mistake to think that you can do anything about battery if you will not look at the common assumptions in it about men and women, at what is, what I called at the beginning, normal, ordinary, and part of what is normal and ordinary is that a man feels a right of sexual possession over a woman. And he has a long historical reason for feeling it, and he really, really believes it to be true. We are changing that. And the change means that there is a lot of social conflict. A lot of men are angry that we are changing that. A lot of women are afraid because we are changing that. But it is going to change. It will change. It has to change. If it doesn't change, men will continue to batter women because they will continue to feel that they have the right, an implicit God-given right, to own that person over there because of the sexual relationship that the man had with the woman. One of the experiences that battered women have is that they run away. They run away, and they go back, and they run away, and they go back, and they run away, and they go back. And there didn't used to be shelters anywhere. Anyone who wanted to help a battered woman was going to have to deal with the anger of the man. Now, because there's some state support for shelters, the state stands a little bit, not between the man and the woman, no, but between the man and whoever is helping the woman. I want to explain something to you about the experience of running away, so that maybe for those of you who find it bewildering, you will have some idea of what it means to run away and then go back, decide to go back. Most women have the idea that when they get married and they live in a house and they clean the house and they take care of the house and they, you know, buy pretty things for the house and fix the house up, that it's their home. They have this dumb idea. And it's amazing how much human beings want a home to live in. And so a woman makes a home, quote unquote, a homemaker. She makes a home where she and her husband and their children will live together. She may also be working. She may not be working, quote unquote, working. I mean, in this time of social transition, we're talking about so many experiences that are changing. That's the good part. The hard part is to try to keep track of the ways in which they're changing so that we know what's happening around us. Of course she works. She works all the time. She may be doing paid labor outside the home. But regardless, she thinks she has a home. And when she runs away, she has reached the point of deciding, understanding, believing that she cannot stay one more second. She may run away because a particular outburst of violence has been too terrible to stand. She may be very badly hurt when she runs away. She may run away because she's had a period of peace and she feels stronger and she thinks she can run away. But most women leave at moments of high desperation, at moments when the husband goes for the children, at moments when she believes she's going to be killed. And then she gets out there, and still, even with the battered women's movement, there still is no place for most women to go in this country. I mean, I come from New York City. It's a big city. The police, the statistics I know, 2 years ago got a quarter of a million phone calls, just to the police, that a woman was being beaten. There are in New York City 429 beds for women who are battered. Most places of the country are not better than that. So there's not necessarily anywhere to go, even though you are trying to make a place and have made some places for women to go. So she runs away and she's desperate and she's probably just been hurt. She may have children, she may have money, she may not have money, but even if she has money, the double standard again, she won't have access to the money. The money might be in the bank, but within 24 hours it's going to be his, not hers. Because see, he's not desperate and bleeding. He knows what to do. And she gets out there, and there are a whole lot of other men on the street. And she's vulnerable, and she doesn't have money. And one way or another, they come after her. They come after her to pick her up. They come after her to flirt. They come after her to help her. Help her, meaning usually an exchange of something she needs for something they want. Which is to say that when she leaves this home that she thought she had, she goes out into a land with predators in it who are glad she's there because she's vulnerable. And when she's out there, she starts remembering that she had a home. And she starts thinking that she has a right to have a home. She may even get angry at the man who hurt her and took her home away from her. And somehow or another, she will, in her mind, find a way to reclaim the home that she believes she has a right to. But there's nothing straightforward in society for her to do. I mean, she can't go to a court and say, look, I am a homemaker. I made the home. I would like to live there. You see, I bought the curtains. I did this. I did that. She is suddenly homeless. And the power, the desire, the feeling of having a right to be there is very often what sends women back into trying to make deals with the batterer. Because when the woman goes back, she has to cut a deal. She has to say, I'm sorry, I left. She has to say, it was my fault, I didn't mean it. She has to say, you were right. And if she says all of those things convincingly enough, and if he wants her to come back for whatever his reasons are, she will then have a home. But what will have happened to her? She will have had the experience of submission, real submission. That's what submission is, humiliation. I am down on my knees, please take me back. And please take me back sometimes just means let me inside. I need a place to live. And you're my best chance, please take me back. We see women entering into bargains. Entering into bargains in which basically they are giving up any possibility of physical safety in order to have a place to live, in order to have food on the table for their children. And part of what I'm trying to say to you about this is that it's not just the money deal. It's not just the economic deal. It's that we do have a right to a home, don't we? I mean, don't we, really? When is there a time in an adult woman's life when this society says a woman, yes, a woman without a man, has a right to a home on her own terms? She has a right to live in some kind of dignity with some kind of safety. So I'm also trying to say to you that the situation of battery can't be solved if we don't understand in this society that a woman actually does have a right to have a home. We're a homeless people unless we enter into a relationship with a man for a home. I am not speaking to you about not entering into relationships with men. I am saying that those relationships need to be